Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, picking up the pieces. Florida residents return home and start the cleanup effort following Hurricane Milton. We hear from the mayor of a city that was directly hit. Concern in the Koreas. Developments as to why Pyongyang is threatening war with South Korea. Push for peace. Amid his trip to several European cities, the leader of Ukraine meets with Pope Francis at the Vatican. Plus, retirement plan. After 14 seasons in the NBA, Gordon Hayward is embarking on a new journey. We'll explain. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of Pope St. John the 23rd. Our top story tonight, as people in Florida begin to repair the immense damage caused by Hurricane Milton, President Joe Biden announces that he will visit the state on Sunday. Today, he also updated the nation about his administration's response to the natural disaster, which is also impacting this year's hotly contested presidential election. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, Florida's vital tourism industry is beginning to return to normal tonight. Its theme parks reopening. While deadly and destructive, many are relieved Milton wasn't worse. Now, earlier, President Biden was briefed on Milton and Helene. He said today Milton alone, according to early estimates, may have caused $50 billion in damages. He's promising to help people get back on their feet.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I know it's material things, but I gotta start all over again, you know? Everything I had there is no good.
Hours after Hurricane Milton tore through and tore up Florida, leaving destruction, misery, and uncertainty, the massive cleanup began. In Clearwater, crews working using heavy machinery to haul away the tangled debris piles. And today, President Joe Biden discussed the current situation in the Sunshine State.
My request, the primary focus of today's briefing, has been on the power restoration and debris removal because they're urgent needs. Milton left over 3 million people without power.
Milton smashed through coastal communities, tore homes to pieces, flooded streets, knocked out power, and spawned a barrage of deadly tornadoes.
And to state the obvious, I'm sure you feel the same way. Our heart goes out to all those folks who've lost not only personal property, but their homes and some lost lives.
Meanwhile, the presidential election, now 25 days away. Today, Vice President Kamala Harris trying to project leadership in the eye of the recent storms, visiting Scottsdale, Arizona.
It is important to look out for each other. It is important to understand that the vast majority of us have so much more in common than what separates us.
And former President Donald Trump attacking the administration's disaster response, speaking today in Aurora, Colorado.
And before going further, I want to let everyone who is still recovering from the hurricanes that hit Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, and Virginia to know that we are thinking of them and we are praying for them.
Trump's rally marking the first time either presidential campaign has visited Colorado, which votes reliably Democratic in statewide races.
Now tonight, flooding from Milton's heavy rains is still causing problems. Today, Governor Ron DeSantis warned people to not let down their guard and be aware of hazards. Some communities there are still dealing with damage done by Hurricane Helene just a few weeks ago. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And we turn now to Bruce Rector, mayor of Clearwater, Florida. Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us. We really appreciate it. And please know that our thoughts and prayers are with everyone in your community and all of Florida right now. Can you kind of just give us on-the-ground perspective of what happened with Milton in your community?
Well, we've had two major hurricanes in 2 weeks. The first one in Clearwater, we were hit hard by a historic storm surge, 7 feet. That's almost twice what our prior record was for storm surge. So our barrier islands, our beach community, was devastated by that. sweeping. This one did not bring the fear storm surge that we were worried about on, 2 weeks after the prior one, but it brought heavy wind damage, flood damage. So we had to rescue 500 people yesterday from an apartment complex, not in an evacuation zone, with no reason to believe that they were at risk, because they had a sudden flash flood, which jeopardized all of them and their families.
It is unbelievable. We know that so many people, millions of people in Florida are without power. What about in Clearwater? What are you seeing there?
We have many, many people without electricity. In fact, most of our traffic signals are not working. So navigating the streets is very difficult. There's still a lot of debris left over from the first hurricane, even more debris. It's really not safe. Not helpful to our essential services for folks to be out trying to drive around to just look and see or be curious. It's really not the time for that. So we ask for patience with our citizens to let our essential services workers do their job to restore power and to restore utilities to our community.
Yeah, so devastating. Mr. Mayor, I just want to ask you this before I let you go. I know you've seen a lot of hurricanes. How does Milton rank on the scale here?
Well, as the governor just pointed out, we were actually hurt first by Helene that helped me, because no one really, unless you experience it like I did the night of Helene, I was on the phone with grown men crying because they didn't evacuate. Water was rushing in. They were fearing for their lives and their property. But the devastating power of that storm surge is just incredible. So Milton was very hard on us from a standpoint of high wind, knocking out electricity, but actually Helene was the more significant and life-changing damage for us. So we'll stop debris removal and try to help those folks who have been displaced because of Helene, but we're getting back into that immediately to try to help those families.
Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for your time today. I know you have so much going on, so we appreciate it. We're praying for you, everyone in Clearwater and in Florida right now. God bless.
Thank you for your prayer.
And speaking of Hurricane Helene, as we know, it hit landfall, made landfall, that is, in northwest Florida on September 26th as a major Category 4 storm. Less than a week later, Hurricane Milton hit Florida's storm, ravaged coast as a Category 3 storm. One writer says he believes it is no coincidence. An op-ed in the New York Times, Porter Fox writes that we are witnessing a new reality. Supercharged hurricanes are no longer outliers, freak disasters, or storms of the century. Fossil fuel pollution has made them a fixture of life around the world, and they are going to get worse with millions of people in their crosshairs. Last year, in a letter titled Praise God, Pope Francis built upon his 2015 encyclical Laudato Si. In it, he raises the alarm on the climate change, asking for a response to the crisis. In the letter, he writes, it is verifiable that specific climate changes provoked by humanity are notably heightening the probability of extreme phenomenon that are increasingly frequent and intense. And Porter Fox joins us now. He is the author of Category 5, Superstorms and the Warming Oceans That Feed Them. And he also spent 3 years reporting on extreme weather. Porter, great to have you on the show. I know you grew up in Maine. There's a lot of extreme weather there, but you also spent 3 years sailing through storms and visiting research labs to learn about the increase in extreme cyclones. What did you learn?
You know, I learned a lot of this from sailboat captains, from being on their boats and talking to that community who had been sailing the seas for 30, 40 years and started to see a lot of major planetary systems changing. And one of the things they were seeing is a lot more power in these storms that have really gone off the charts. And here in America, they become the number one most deadly, most expensive natural disaster that Americans see. America spent over $1 trillion on recovery in the last 50 years and lost 7,000 people to these storms. And like I said, it's just getting started. It will follow the arc of increasing temperatures on this planet, which ultimately end up in the ocean, warming the seas. And when a storm passes over a warm patch like that, like Helene and Milton both did, they just intensify almost out of control.
Yeah, and you talked to a lot of experts in your reporting, too. What did you learn from them in explaining why this new breed of ultra-intense Category 5 storm is really increasing?
Yeah, I mean, the folks at the National Hurricane Center, at NOAA, and other facilities around the world are truly incredible. They're on the cutting edge of this. They have gotten a track cone, like, very, very, very reliable 3 days out or so. But the intensity of the storms, they're still trying to get their hands on here. It's getting to a point where we're going to have to add another classification, because these ultra-intense Category 5 storms, which, you know, at some point will be hitting wind speeds of 190 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour later this century, are so devastating. It's just like nothing we've ever seen.
What about reversing course? What have experts told you about that? Is it possible?
The most inspiring interview that I had was a scientist at GFS in Princeton who told me that it follows CO2 levels in our atmosphere directly. More CO2, more powerful storms draw down that CO2. Storms start to draw down almost immediately, within a year, maybe a bit more. So we're very much in control of the climate here. We've heated this planet. We've created superstorms. The good news is we can wind that down with sequestration and trying to get to net zero. And if you get CO2 back to 1990 levels, you'll see 1990-type hurricanes in our oceans.
All right, Porter, great to talk to you. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Tracy.
Well, the United Nations peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon says several of its workers were injured following an explosion at its headquarters. This as dozens of civilians are dead and more than 100 others wounded in Israeli airstrikes in Beirut Thursday night. The air raid was the deadliest attack on central Beirut since the war began. The strikes hit two residential buildings holding displaced people fleeing the conflict in other areas of Lebanon. Well, North Korea accuses South Korea of flying drones to its capital and is now threatening a military response. Officials in Pyongyang say that several times this week, South Korean drones dropped off anti-North Korean pamphlets. North Korea describes this as a dangerous provocation that could escalate into a war. It also says that its forces will prepare all means of attack capable of destroying the South. The ministry adds, quote, "The safety lock on our trigger has now been released." And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including race for the Senate, a closer look at the elections in Maryland and why it could decide the balance of power on Capitol Hill. And we speak to a former NBA star and why he decided to join the Catholic Church. Back, Maryland could be one of the states that decides who controls the U.S. Senate in January. Former Republican Governor Larry Hogan hopes to become the state's first Republican senator in nearly 40 years. He is running against Democrat Angela Alsobrooks, a county executive. During their only debate, the two clashed over the need for reforming the Supreme Court.
I do support reforms for the Supreme Court. One of them would be to have term limits. I also agree with the notion of expanding the Supreme Court. Whoever controls the Senate also controls, people like Lindsey Graham will control appointing further Supreme Court justices when we are at complete odds.
Larry Hogan countered that Democrats are trying to interfere with a separate branch of government.
If there's one thing that we should not be politicizing, it's the Supreme Court. And yet it has been politicized by both sides. And I think trying to change the rules to jam things through on a party line vote is not the right way to go about it. If you can't find one person to cross over and vote for a Democratic judge or a Republican judge, I'm not going to support them.
But they both say they support so-called abortion rights.
I have support and still support women's access to reproductive care. It's not just abortion care. It's also things like Planned Parenthood, and that's the reason that they have endorsed me. I'll continue to support women. Women's reproductive freedoms, contraception, abortion, and IVF.
As Governor Larry Hogan, a Catholic, says, he upheld Maryland abortion laws contrary to the teachings of the church.
5 or 6 years ago, I said Roe was the correct decision. When it was overturned, I said it was the wrong decision. And I said, when I get to the Senate, the very first vote, my first bill I will sponsor is to codify Roe.
Maryland voters will also be deciding whether to enshrine so-called abortion rights into the state's constitution. Pro-lifers say it would have a drastic impact on parental rights over abortion, sex change operations, or even over custody of their minor children.
Well, on a different note, during his 14 seasons in the NBA, Gordon Hayward played for teams in Utah, Boston, Charlotte, and Oklahoma City. He retired from basketball over the summer and is now part of a new team, one that is universal. In a recent ceremony in Rome, Hayward joined the Catholic Church. Archbishop Timothy Broglio administered confirmation and First Holy Communion. Hayward's wife is Catholic, and one of their four children just received her First Communion. Hayward chose the confirmation name Sebastian after Saint Sebastian, the patron saint of athletes. And Gordon Hayward joins us now, and he spent, as you mentioned, 14 seasons in the NBA after being a first-round pick coming out of Butler University in 2010. Gordon, great to be with you today. Thank you so much, and congratulations. Welcome home. Tell us a little bit about your faith journey and why you decided to join the Catholic Church, and why now?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. You know, I was raised Lutheran, so, you know, not too different from Catholicism. And when I married my wife 10 years ago, you know, she was big into Catholic faith and her family was big into the faith as well. And I had an inkling that I might want to convert. I had a lot of conversations with her brother, Max, who was my sponsor and who went over to Rome with us. But I didn't want to just do it. My kids are growing up in the Catholic church and the Catholic community. But I wanted to learn for myself and really take the time and figure it all out. And, you know, there's some differences between, you know, Lutheran and Catholic. And when I retired, I felt like this was the right time. I had enough time. I've been doing classes with a priest of mine. And, you know, it all just kind of worked out for me to be able to do it in Rome. It was such an unbelievable experience. And I couldn't be more thankful for everyone that helped make it possible. So, you know, one of the main reasons why I wanted to convert was the Eucharist. I mean, it's kind of the whole thing. And after reading the book that my friend Joe Mazzulla, who's obviously the head coach of the Celtics, he gave me is the Eucharist is really Jesus. And after I read that, it was like, you know, man, like I gotta convert. So
that's beautiful. And I know that you also posted a well-known Latin phrase on social media. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Nunc Chepi. I actually stole this from Philip Rivers, and I talked to him about this when I came back from my major injury when I was in Boston. And, you know, I know he was big on that, and I wore it on my wrist throughout the rest of my career. And it just means now I begin. And it's about, you know, kind of like staying in the moment in the athlete sense, staying in the moment, you know, each play you're beginning again, whether it was a bad play or a good play, you're kind of just, you know, staying grounded and moving forward. And for me, with my Catholic faith, I felt like it was like a new beginning, like I'm beginning this new chapter in my life as I'm now retired and I get to spend way more time with my family. And I'm also beginning a new chapter in my life becoming Catholic. So I felt like it was just really appropriate. And I also did it in Rome, so it applied there as well. So I felt like it just really fit.
That's wonderful. We don't have a lot of time left, but I quickly want to ask you this. You mentioned, you know, you chose Saint Sebastian as your confirmation name, of course, popular among athletes. But was there anything else about Saint Sebastian that really stood out to you and why you wanted to choose him to be your confirmation saint?
Yeah, of course, the athlete thing for sure. I also got a book that my sponsor Max gave me where I read about his life, and his life was just amazing. He was in the military, and I have a family that was in the military, and so that really spoke to me as well. And you know, they tried to murder him with arrows, and he stayed with it and stayed through it. And I felt like that also connected with me, my injury in the NBA, and so all those reasons. I mean, he was an amazing person, and so that's why I chose it.
Oh, Gordon, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this with us. We really appreciate it. God bless you, and God bless your family as well.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, in pursuit of peace, Pope Francis meets with Ukraine's leader during his tour of European cities. We have the latest. Plus, learn how one Catholic artist transforms prayer into works of art and how she got her inspiration from a very familiar name. We'll tell you about it next. Pope Francis met today with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky. The two discussed ways to end the war in Ukraine. It was part of Zelensky's tour of Europe. The Holy Father expressed his closeness to Ukraine and says the Holy See is happy to work towards a peace deal. Also today, the Holy Father had another significant meeting, this time with the president of Spain, who leads a socialist government. When Pedro Sanchez and his coalition took office in January of 2020, they made it clear that Spain planned to move in a liberal, secularizing direction. In today's visit, the Spanish president invited Pope Francis to visit the Canary Islands, a Spanish territory. The prime minister says the audience with Pope Francis was very positive for relations between his country and the Vatican. Well, the Synod on Synodality is closing out its second week, and the discussions are focusing on unity among people of God. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigren has more.
In a powerful act of charity and solidarity, the Synod organized a collection for the victims of the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. 32,000 euros were donated by the Synod participants, and another 30,000 were offered by the Dicastery for the Charity Services. The total amount was delivered through the Apostolic Nunciature in Jerusalem and has already been made available to the pastor of the Holy Family Church in Gaza. The emphasis on unity is emblematic on the second week of the Synod. The first Mass since the start of the Synod was celebrated in St. Peter's Basilica by Lebanese Bishop Ruhana in the Maronite Rite. In his homily, the bishop stressed that conflicts, not only the one in the Middle East, represent failure and the breakdown of dialogue that leads to a rejection of all social conviviality.
It is important to remember during our synodal journey that the future of our churches and of our respective countries, especially those living in times of crisis, should not depend solely on geostrategic and geopolitical calculations and analyses.
The Holy Father announced the elevation of Father Timothy Radcliffe to cardinal on December 8, along with 20 others who will be eligible to vote in a conclave. Cardinal-elect Radcliffe plays a significant role as one of the two spiritual advisors to the Synod and chose to reflect on unity and listening.
Many people at this Synod want this Synod to give an immediate yes or no on various issues. But that is not how the Church advances into the deep mystery of the divine love. We mustn't run away from the difficult questions. We listen, as somebody said, not so as to reply, but so as to learn.
Bishop Czeslaw Kozon, the bishop of the Danish Diocese of Copenhagen, explained how synodality is already present in the Nordic countries in Europe, where there is a deep sense of equality and democracy. He expressed his hope to share the Scandinavian perspective on synodality with the Synod to help foster unity.
Being part of such a gathering is a good encouragement to see that you are part of something big, even if you are not that numerous at home, but it confirms your belonging to a universal church. with all that's, that the strength that will include.
This evening, Synod participants joined the Holy Father for an ecumenical vigil at the Square of the Roman Proto-Martyrs inside the Vatican walls. Cardinal Kurt Koch, who leads Vatican efforts on Christian unity, noted the venue's significance. Tradition locates the martyrdom of Peter here, he said, adding that holiness is the surest path to unity. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And finally tonight, in our Feel Good Friday segment, we highlight a woman from Northern Virginia who has turned prayer into an art. Prayer cards, greeting cards, and art prints, all beautifully painted in watercolors by Kristen Bryant of Alexandria, Virginia. She's the founder of Novena Cards and says the idea for the business came to her through divine inspiration.
I was praying a novena with a group of friends. We were praying the St. Joseph novena. And at the end of the novena, we were praying for husbands, future spouses, boyfriends. I had this inclination that I wanted to send them a card. And so at the end of the novena, I looked for a greeting card to send them, and there wasn't one to send. So that's where the Holy Spirit implanted the inspiration for novena cards.
And although she was working as a dental hygienist at the time and didn't have really much formal art training, she had faith and a role model, Mother Angelica, a feisty cloistered nun who knew nothing about TV, but through determination and the grace of God, went on to found the largest religious media network in the world, EWTN.
She has been my cheerleader from heaven. Her witness gave me the encouragement to start Novena Cards. Her yes inspired me to know that even though I was, you know, in a job that was not artistic, that I could have the courage to pray and ask God, please, you know, one day I would love to use my creative gifts and talents for you.
And that is exactly what happened, turning her creative outlet into a business and a creative way to evangelize.
It has turned into a ministry where people pray for others and send the encouragement of their prayers. And it's just been amazing. People walk up to us all the time and tell us that they've received a card, that it brought such joy to their lives, and that they in turn want to send a card to another person, encourage them. So it's kind of like a chain of encouragement that keeps going.
And her words of encouragement for others who want to switch gears in their career and serve the Lord, take a leap of faith.
You give your yes. That's what I did. Just know that God can use all of the things that he has given you along the way to develop whatever he wants.
And God bless Kristen. If you'd like to find her work and her prayer cards and buy a few for your friends or yourself, you can go to novenacards.com or follow her on Instagram at novenacards. Check her out. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.